if housing development is leaning more towards like courtyards or balconies, do you think that the idea of like a traditional garden that we would have thought of 30 years ago is becoming a more rare occurrence now?
No, definitely you would think so. I guess, yeah, the more typical thing as people start moving into apartments is really, I guess, your only private space being a balcony, and then probably relying on more communal spaces, really, if you want to get into some more extensive gardening, whether that be a rooftop garden or, I guess, the landscape around the buildings. Or I guess that's why we're also seeing this kind of really big flourishing of community garden kind of spaces where people can, I guess, then get out into the bigger kind of public domain and get their hands dirty.
So we have to, do you think we have to adapt to the way that this is moving if we want to have our own kind of green garden space that's our own?
Very much so. I mean, I guess with this increasing density, the biggest concern really is the heating up of the city.
Oh, okay.
So if we want to actually have a denser, livable city, it's critical to be engaging greenery wherever we can to try and kind of absorb this heat. So again, that's where things like rooftops become really critical. Not having them as hard, barren kind of scapes that just absorb heat, we can actually transform them into beautiful kind of transformative gardens that can be both just very thin profile, just for more filtering rainwater, and just having basic, very low maintenance plants to actual usable spaces. And then I guess it's where spaces like walls and vertical spaces also become really critical in just growing things up, especially on, you know, like the western side of a building to shade the building and just avoid that really hot western sun getting in.
That's kind of an engineering concern that you've mentioned there, the idea that, you know, the city's kind of grey, we need these green spaces from a heat transfer perspective. But what I was interested in, the idea of the more like effect on our emotion, the idea of having a nice green space that we can escape to rather than a grey concrete slab. Could you tell us a little bit about that, about how it affects our mood?
Well, yeah, there's a forever growing body of work really advocating, I guess, the power of green spaces and gardening for healing and therapy, really. I mean, the number of kind of gardening groups about that are used for that very specific focus, or a number of publications discuss, I guess, hospitals, and if people are in rooms with access to just even a green view, their healing is just so much faster than, than people looking at a wall, a blank wall. And I guess even in office spaces now, you just see this proliferation of even office plants and green walls because of their proven ability to remove VOCs from the environment, the air, and improve air quality and things like that. So I guess they just have benefits on so many levels, really, whether it be emotional or just purely, yeah, physical and things like that.
Well, speaking of the benefits of incorporating these green spaces into our increasingly cramped lifestyles, you're running a workshop that's happening next weekend. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I guess it's really hitting on a lot of these themes, really. It's called Design Your Edible Oasis.
Okay.
And it's really about giving people the basic steps into designing their own garden. Because I guess, especially with smaller spaces, you need to really consider what you're going to do before jumping in. So the first half about of the workshop goes through the process of, I mean, evaluating the site and looking at what needs and wants you have for the garden, just as a basic kind of list exercise. And then second phase is then incorporating them into kind of a spatial planning exercise and how, you know, a design evolves from those basic needs in the site. And then we get down to the more detailed selection of plants and other garden elements that may go in there to make a terrific space. And this whole kind of design process is demonstrated through a number of kind of case studies of our very own project. So the people that attend get to like really get down to the nitty-gritty of, you know, how that design has occurred and all the trials and triumphs along the way.
Ah, okay. You mentioned, so it has edible in the title.
Edible,
so this is
indeed
not just like an ornamental kind of nice space. You're also talking about practical, like growing fruit or vegetables.
Absolutely.
Okay,
well, look,
cool.
We're big advocators of really combining everything, edibles, ornamentals, natives, the whole gamut. So it's not completely and fundamentally about designing an edible garden, but that is a large component of it, because really I think beautiful spaces can be a combination of all three. So when your veggie patch isn't looking at its best, maybe, you know, the native plant next door is looking awesome, or, you know, the rose is blooming. So all can work together, create a kind of a biodiverse system, both visually and through like an ecosystem. So I think combining all three can be a really special way of creating a really interesting space.
And it sounds as though you're teaching a really holistic approach. It's all of the steps that you have to go through. You start from looking at the space and what do I want, all the way up to what specific plants am I going to be using.
That's it. I mean, really, I guess through the three or four case studies, people really get a diverse range of different projects, from a little car park garden where plants are almost having to hang on the washing line because there was no other space,
okay,
to, you know, a larger plot in the eastern suburbs where it's actually a more substantial traditional garden. So, yeah, there's a really broad range of scales. And then the second half of the workshop is more about people applying these skills then to a design exercise. So they'll be given a client, a site, and, you know, a list of needs and desires, and they'll have to translate that all into a little design by the end of the workshop.
And you mentioned you have some case studies as well, so you can show examples of this could be your kind of final product if you go through all these steps and go follow the whole thing.
Absolutely. I mean, every site is so extremely different, and as is every client, everyone's needs. So, yeah, through a number of case studies, people can really see that although, you know, you may have a few, you know, common factors, just the site and what's there really dictates a very different response. So, yeah, it's really fun.